and ordered 50 to go into these other fee, fines, and assessments. So some people are sitting back to say, great, you know, we're going to make more money off of this. No one is taking into consideration the impact of that restitution. Again, these are things we tried to work out this summer. We felt we were in a very good footing this summer and that our interests were going to be represented, and we are failing to see that, which is the reason I asked to talk with you today.
You're number one of the 50% that goes after restitution.
We're one of them. You know, it's kind of like saying this is your baby and you've got to tear it in half, because it's very, if you're a victims program, part of what you want is those victims to get back the money that they've lost as a result of being a victim. But there is no district attorney's office that's going to sit there and figure out restitution. They depend on their victims programs. So it's kind of like saying, we need to be there in order to document the restitution, and yet we're taking part of that money that could be going to victims. So we're really torn in the way in which this formula has been devised. But after spending hours and hours this summer, it appears to be at least a method to arrive at the difficulties the State Court Administrator's Office is having in trying to fine-tune this system that's just got so many things in it.
I have a question. I thought that the restitution was going to be the number one category in this bill.
No, restitution is paid. It is in Category 1. Correct. Category 2 are those that are state programs, and Category 3 would be those that aren't. And then what would happen is if $100 is paid in, for example, and it's a case involving restitution, tell me, Linda, if I'm wrong, $50 would go towards restitution. The other $50 would go into this fund to be delivered into Category 2. Once all of Category 1 is paid, then you would go for all of Category 2 to be paid. So after his restitution is paid, then all the money that came in would go to pay all of the fees, fines, and assessments and those items in Category 2. The remainder then would go to Category 3.
And so I think restitution would be paid first?
At a half rate. It would be paid first before the others, but only at half the rate it's currently being paid. Right now, a defendant is ordered to pay the $50 penalty assessment, $4,000 in restitution, and all these other things. Most courts would say, okay, we'll pay the $50 for the victim's penalty assessment, then we'll pay restitution until it's done, and then we'll pay the rest. What we're doing now is we're taking part of that money that would have gone to victims through restitution and divvying it up into Category 2. So there's so many things. This is a very complex bill. I do not envy any of you the job, and I don't envy any of you trying to explain this to a bigger group, but I did want you to know some of the concerns that we have, and we've tried to work with them all summer long.
Don't worry about us.
I guess what ask you to do is that we will schedule another work session on this one.
And okay.
It might be good to get those specific things down, talk to the folks about them, see if you can reach some conclusions on them, and bring them into the next work session. Linda?
Mr. Chair and committee members, Linda Zuckerman again. I just wanted to make it clear to the committee that in coming up with the numbers, we, the Judicial Department, have absolutely no interest in who gets what portion of what monies. Therefore, what we did was to take as neutral a position as we possibly could and reflected only comparative percentages based on historical data that we have. In the case of the victims, I mean, that's why we would not be inclined to decide who should get a higher versus lower percentage. It's really a policy decision for the legislature as opposed to for us. However, I would emphasize that, first of all, the reserve account was specially set up to give greater assurance to only two of the entities that get the split out of the state account and out of the state portion, and that was for BPST and the victim penalty assessment. So that reserve account was established particularly having in mind the concerns of the criminal injury compensations account. There is another portion that I have discussed just briefly with representative of the victim injury compensation account, and that is the way that a section of the bill, there's a possibility that an amendment may be offered, but again, that wouldn't be from our interest. But the way that the victims groups now receive monies is that if Multnomah County collects $10,000 in a month, the money goes to the Attorney General's office, and Multnomah County gets one half of the monies that they were that of the monies attributed to their county's collection, so they would get $5,000 back. The way the bill was drafted, and frankly, I didn't realize how the system worked now, but the way the bill is drafted now, one half of all monies coming into the victim compensation account are to be directed back to victim assistance groups. What that means is, let's say Jackson County doesn't have a victim assistance program. However, assessments for the victim penalty assessment are still made in Jackson County. Those monies, now half of all the monies collected, the way the section is written now, I think it's Section 11, would go back to victim groups, which means actually that the portion of that fund that's taking a bit of a bite there is the compensation fund. So I did point that out or raise that issue and ask the question of the victim, what's it called, injury compensation account, whatever people. And so they're aware of that and are taking a look at it. But as it stands right now, the way the bill is written, actually the victim assistance groups would receive a bit of a windfall the way the bill is currently drafted.
Okay.
Thank you.
We will thank you very much. We'll hold this over for additional work session. So we already did 2512, 2550, 2551. We'll work out and go to both of those since they're related. And I had a, let's come up, Mr. Lynn. I had a discussion. There's a letter from the which is addressed to Representative Bauman and myself that should be received. And on both of these, we had a discussion concerning these two bills. There are some suggested amendments, but there are some things, and after we got through the discussion, that we feel will need some additional some additional amendments. You just also got a fiscal impact statement there. 2550 is the Criminal Justice Council requested that what they wanted to have happen there was that when a person first appeared before a court, that there would be a for a crime, that there would be fingerprints taken, and that's in the case of felonies and two misdemeanors that are listed. The concern there, I think, that was we heard from various organizations was well, there was two things. One is that if it was there was a sense that if somebody came before a judge, the question was asked, where have you had your fingerprints taken? No, I have not. That would the judge would then, under this particular, the way this is drafted right now, have to send somebody out to get the fingerprints taken. It would discombobulate the flow of the process of, through the courts, and so we wanted to clarify that. Secondly, there was some question, I think, by local law enforcement agencies, and I think in Portland and Multnomah County, as to where that particular work would be done, whether it was in the court itself or in some other center. So there were some amendments that needed to be made to that. Those were questions there. On 2551, which is the dealing with the disposition report, essentially that act would have the requirement for completing disposition reports returned to the courts. Right now, the district attorney, in the case of felonies, has that responsibility. The question there came up, I've never seen it, the disposition form, is it supposed to be made out? And we got one that we couldn't read. If they are required to take fingerprints on that. And in the discussion we had with Mr. Linden on this, there are 13 counties out of the 36 that are currently on to the data system. That these can be taken electronically. Since dispositions are done by the courts in any case, this is the second report, and that report comes to the, basically is for the state police, and then enters it into the LED system, and it does some other things. We think that that's useful information. It would obviously all be done much more efficiently, effectively, if it all could be done electronically. to do that, then you wouldn't be able to take fingerprints. You'd have to have a referral back to the fingerprints that are required in the other parts. There needs to be a cross-reference to that. So it's a management system. And Mr. Linden has submitted a letter which in the last paragraph of it says, if the subcommittee is agreeable to the changes, which is sort of the ones I was just outlining, I think, if I missed that by far, that they would prepare amendments and submit them to us for the next work session. And unless there's something I missed, Mr. Linden, and unless the committee wants to try to tackle us right now, I would just as soon set both of these over, wait for the amendments to come down, and then we'll move on the bills. But what did I miss?
Mr. Chairman, I would add only one thing on the disposition reports. The amendments would propose that they transfer responsibility from the DAs to the courts be phased in as courts come onto the computer system. And secondly, that it needs to be understood that the disposition information we're going to send to the Oregon State Police will not fit right into the little box on the manual form that they require be used. However, it can be linked to their forms by use of their identification number on our computer system. And again, the rationale is, in this age and with the volume of data we're talking about and with the fact that we have automated, some courts automated now and more courts in the future, the manual handwritten system of filling out those disposition reports just doesn't make any sense. The fiscal impact you received would anticipate that we continue to do it the way the system presently works. I'll tell you right off the bat that I don't think that's a wise expenditure of state funds. I think this is the amendments we've talked about in concepts are a better alternative.
Yeah, I believe that if we can adopt the amendments that you're talking about and then phase it in over that period of time, it would be no fiscal impact, or at least not $300,000.
No, Mr. Chairman, as we bring courts onto the computer system and generate the disposition information, it's just going to be one more report that we run and would not have any specific dollar cost that we would tag to it.
Okay. So then there's some handwritten amendments by Frank Gruber that clarifies the 181 statutes as to what we're talking about, felonies and misdemeanors. I'd take a look at that if you would, and we'll consider those.
I'll be happy to
work session as well. Any questions or concerns, we'll move those over then. House Bill 2557 relating to probation. 2536.
No.
I'm sorry. Let's do 2536. Anybody here on 2536? This is the family visitation bill. Is there any amendments? 2536. I can't find the actual bill. There it is. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. There's no amendments.
I'd move it to the full committee with a recommendation that it be referred to Ways and Means as it has been by prior reference in the DPAS recommendation.
Your Representative Springer moves House Bill 2536 to the full committee with a DPAS recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion.
Well, I guess I'd have to ask Representative Springer if he's moving the amended version or the original version.
Is there amendments?
Yeah.
I don't have amendments. Have I missed? Did we make it? We haven't amended anything yet. We haven't made amendments.
That doesn't change my position on the bill. I just wanted to
know. What amendments are you referring to?
Well, I believe when Representative Hostica came in, he had material prepared by the people, Oregon People for Prison Alternatives, the deleted spousal equivalents, reduced the length of each visit. They did a variety of other things. And I don't want to cloud the issue. If you want to move the original bill, feel free. I just want to know what you're doing.
We This tunes us in with amendments.
What?
Mr. Toombs from the Corrections Division was in with some recommended amendments.
Well, I don't... you've got some other amendments than I do, too.
Yeah, I've...
Oh, I see, yeah.
Mr. Toombs proposed some amendments, I think. He wanted to delete certain language.
Yeah.
Yeah, his amendments would have, in Section 2, Line 6, Sub 1, delete the term spouse and substitute the language legal spouse of the opposite sex. And then in Section 2, deleting spousal equivalent, essentially, his view there was that Oregon doesn't have, it would be recognition of common law marriage, which Oregon doesn't recognize, I gather. And he goes through and does that. And then in Section 3, Line 15, he has, according to selected criteria status of the Corrections Division, his view there is that they need to have some sort of criteria to assess the propriety of a visit. And some other language that related to the emergency types of situations, things like that. Is there any interest in those amendments?
Tell you what, Mr. Chair, I would I don't recall there's any negative testimony from the sponsor as it related to Mr. Toombs' amendments. So I would, even though they haven't been put in LC form, I would be glad to accept the amendments proposed by Mr. Toombs, and I guess as a friendly amendment, if you want to treat it that way or however you like, I'd like my motion to be considered as incorporating the amendments proposed by the Corrections Division of Mr. Toombs.
Okay, that, unless there's any objections, we consider that Representative Springer's motion would move this to full committee would include the recommended amendments as proposed in testimony given by Thomas Toombs on February 27, 1987, included in his testimony are a number of amendments that those would be incorporated for amendments to the bill. Any objections? No, we'll consider that a friendly amendment. Motion is to move House Bill 2536 with the recommended amendments as proposed by Mr. Toombs to the full committee with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion. Call the roll.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Springer.
Aye.
Burton. Aye. Okay, 2557. We have, for some reason, I don't have a copy of the bill. 2557. Okay. Anybody, do you guys have any comments you want to come up from the Oliver Crowding Project? I don't recall receiving any negative testimony on this particular one. Are these amendments?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I am Bob Watson, representing the staff of the Oregon Jail Overcrowding Project. I've just handed you an amendment to House Bill 2557 that was based upon information we received as we talked to other parties interested in this bill that would be inserted on page 1, line 20 to expand the time a probationer for a court to hear probation, have a hearing, arraignment for a hearing on probation violation to 36 hours, which is the same as for a person arrested for a new crime. It just seemed to satisfy those who were concerned about the crunch that our bill put on it one day, and 36 hours seems reasonable to us.
Okay. There is an amendment proposed. We have a fiscal analysis provided to committee on the bill, which indicates a $26,000 anticipated increase in costs due to additional clerical time to process paperwork and reschedule court calendaring of functions. So would that require, I gather, a subsequent to Ways and Means? Chair will entertain a motion on the amendment proposed by OJOP.
I have one question before we make that one.
Representative Phillips.
Did the sheriffs have a letter in here supporting the bill? Did you consult them? I assume that's
yes,
the purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd move the amendments as prepared on House Bill 2557, dated March 16th, 1987.
Representative Phillips moves the amendments to House Bill 2557, as outlined on Oregon Jail Over Crowding Project stationery, dated 16 March. That would change delete line 21 and insert the language except for good cause and so on. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objections? Not so ordered. Chair entertain a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Does it have a previous referral? Or would we have to ask for a referral?
It did not previously have a referral. Did it?
Yeah.
Did not previously have a referral, but we don't have to. We don't have to. Somebody will catch us. Yes. Mr. Linden.
Mr. Chairman, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. I wanted to clarify something quickly on the fiscal impact statement that you have. We have two different categories of fiscal impact, immediate and incremental. Immediate are those bills that we feel are going to result in an immediate cost in terms of new staff or supplies and services or capital. Incremental measure workload, additional workload that the courts are going to have to undertake as a result of the passage of a bill. We're not seeking subsequent referrals to Ways and Means on bills that have incremental costs only. We plan to tie all of those incremental costs together at some point in our budget hearing. So I wanted to make that clear in the sense that if this meant we had to go out and hire five new staff people, I feel differently about it. That would have been designated as an immediate cost. What this reflects is additional workload that's going to be required to process court cases and paperwork related thereto within the context of this bill.
The issue I have is that somewhere halfway through the biennium, you aren't back to the ways and or to the e-board saying, gosh, this has created a workload. And
Mr. Chairman, we plan to add up the incremental costs of a variety of bills that are before the legislature and raise that with our subcommittee, but they're different than those bills that are going to require an immediate new infusion of staff and resources.
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Lind, ask you one question. You're saying that this will increase your costs, am I correct?
That's correct.
But this fiscal impact does not take into effect what savings may occur to the local jails.
Mr. Chairman, Council, no, we don't do estimates for the local sheriff's departments who would feel the savings here, although, you know, I'll readily concede anything to relieve jail overcrowding is going to save the county's money. This deals strictly with judicial department resources.
Thank you.
Okay, is there a Representative Bowden?
I'll try my motion again. I'll move that the committee send House Bill 2557, the subcommittee, send it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Bowden moves that House Bill 2557 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Okay, House Bill 2558 deals with the telecommunication transmission of criminal notices, and I don't believe we had any adverse testimony on that. Are there any amendments?
Chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2558 as presented to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Phillips moves House Bill 2558 to full committee with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Gallman.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's fun. 2559. Sentencing time limitations. Did we have any do we have any testimony on this, Edwards? Did you testify?
Mr. Chairman, if I can refresh your memory, there was a concern about the time frames for pre-sentence reports, and in discussions with many parties interested in this, we were asked to try to find from the Corrections Division what the current time frames are to see what impact this bill may have on their workload. If it meant major reprioritizing of work. And I received a letter, and I'm sorry I didn't make copies with the committee. I intended to, but was just found here in my book. But the Corrections Division wrote to me and said that the both in-custody and out-of-custody people in the Southwest, which is Marion County all the way south to California, and east, which is from the center of the Coast Guard, let's see, where does the dividing line start? Here are the east of Marion County, and clear again south and to Idaho. Do all those reports in custody and out of custody in 21 days. So that part of the state is not affected adversely at all by this. However, in the Northwest region, which are seven counties, including Multnomah County, the in-custody pre-sentence reports are completed and returned in 21 working days and 54 days on those that are not in custody. So they've already made some effort to put a priority on the in-custody versus out-of-custody. So the issue is really 5 days on the in-custody, whether or not they could do it that much quicker. And the person who wrote the memorandum to me and who is now in charge of communications, Roby Eldridge, used to be in charge of the Diagnostic Center. He said that when he was in charge of the center, they were able to do it, but of course workload changes and other priorities may have affected that. But the bill does not make a major impact upon workload and priorities for the division. It's just a matter of can you move it 5 days earlier in the metropolitan area.
Okay. Is there a motion from the committee on this?
Move it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
President Springer moves House Bill 2559 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
No.
No.
Mr. Chair, you might want to wait until your next member. No.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. It fails for lack of a majority. Before I gamble that, maybe we'll wait a second.
Yeah, I really want to get to where she went. See where she is with that.
Vote is on House Bill 2559. Representative Springer moved to send it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Aye.
Okay. Pass to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 2560. This is 9-day limitation of use of jail as a condition of felony probationers. The question there was should it be 90 days or?
Yes.
150 days, 120 days. You have amendments.
Chairman, this amendment is, would be inserted. I'm sorry, it has a typographical error. It's page 2, line 7, instead of page 1. It would be inserted right after the heavy print on page 2 of House Bill 2560. It clarifies the issue. We'd had indications of support from, including the district attorneys, who said if it would be clarified that this 90 days didn't mean just one term, but could be used by the court for subsequent violations. And they wanted that clarification, not just in the testimony, but in the bill. So that was the intent of the jail project, that there be that penalty available for the courts in the event of probation violation.
Breach violation.
Yes. Okay. Purpose of this amendment.
Mr. Chair, it is important to emphasize at this point that the DA's, to my knowledge, has not taken a position on this bill.
Yeah, go ahead and add, there's no position on this.
Okay, is there an amendment?
I move the amendments, Mr. Chair.
President Stringer moves to amend House Bill 2560 on page 2, line 7, to include the language after 90. 90-